We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
To see the food industry change to where it needs to change to, which is just make it easy for people to access delicious, healthy foods. It's been pretty tough for the past year. Because really businesses at this point need to build financially sound foundations.
Right.
And so it's been tough. It is a journey, you know, and it, like your poster says in the background, what matters the most is how well you walk through fire. I've been eating a lot of glass and we have 70 investors in the company.
Oh, wow. 70? Wow.
Yeah, with this crowdfunding campaign that we're doing, we're up to like 240. One thing I'm actually finding intriguing right now during this process is we've switched from growth to being profitable, and investors and who they are and how they evolve with the company, right? They're investing for a return. But one thing I've learned so far is that investors that don't understand your industry or not a professional investor, they need to understand the cash needs during the life cycle of the business. And they also need to understand the industry and the evolution of a company, in that it's going to be not very capital efficient in the beginning. It's really important to select the right people that are actually going to support through the life cycle of a company.
How do you do that with a crowdfunding campaign? I'm assuming it was just going to be all sorts of random people. They're like, I love your cookies. I want to give you some money.
My name is Jari Boland. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Nick Naclerio, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you as well. I appreciate you being on the show. You are founder and CEO of Mly. Like, I screwed that all the time.
It's no wrong way to say it.
Yeah. You make cookies.
I do make cookies.
That's, yep. I don't know. Seems like a pretty good gig.
It's not that glamorous. Yeah, it's with you.
Well, you also know Parker. You know Parker Olson, right? He was over at Forage. Yeah.
Yep.
I interviewed him as well. He's just like, yeah, making granola out of mushrooms.
Yeah. What did he say about his experience making granola out of mushrooms?
Oh, well, interesting you should say that. He, you know, it's just like a passion of his. He's such an interesting guy, like, just as an aside. He literally did these, like, life hacking things for 30 days at a time. And after, I don't know how many of these, it's in the show, I forgot. He's like, mushrooms. Yeah, I think this mushroom thing's a pretty good idea. So he just started eating more mushrooms and then he created a company. So,
yeah, interesting guy. Interesting guy.
For sure.
He's lived on a lifeboat. I mean, houseboat.
Yeah. Different. Definitely different. So before we talk about Lee and all that, why don't you tell us how you got to do what you're doing today?
Yeah. So I'm from New York, Westchester, like about an hour north of the city. Italian American family, third generation. I'm 29 now. It's a long story, so I'm going to try to sort of compress it. But when I've always loved food, and naturally in a family, there's always food, an Italian family. now at this age, I know that my parents don't make really good Italian food. But anyway, there's a lot of food, a lot of snacks and cookies from BJ's and Costco. And I loved cooking and I loved baking. And food was a big part of my life. I've been part of food in the food industry in some sense for basically the past 10 out of 15 of my working years. Started at an ice cream shop, then family restaurants, and then cooking school. And I was a chef for a few years in some cool places and made some fancy desserts. And then construction, and then ultimately back to cookies. At 20, I wanted to start a cookie company. And then at 25, I finally made the leap. So it's been 4 years. But with food, when I was younger, food was something I played with and I cooked with. But I also, at about 5, knew that I was different than other people. I realized I was gay. Thankfully, I had a family of people that had sort of paved the way, but it was still a struggle until I was about 18. And I turned to food as a source of comfort and security. Food was, in a sense, like really my friend, but I had an eating disorder at like 10. So had to do some forced soul searching at that age through therapy and
wow,
a lot of mental health processes and modifications. And over, during my teen years, I realized a lot about food and a lot about what my family was offering and what is bad and what is not, what is really, really good for you that actually helps you be the best person that you can be. Mm-hmm. So I wanted, after I got through that stage and came out of the other end without the eating disorder and much better mental health status and lost a bunch of weight, and I wanted to channel that into food. So I went to cooking school, made all of these fancy desserts, worked in very nice kitchens for years with great chefs, and then realized that I was just making sugary, beautiful desserts for people. And it was just felt like useless, completely useless.
Yeah.
And I was also making like $7 to $14 an hour after having my parents spend $45,000 a year on culinary school. So I decided to leave that, go back to school for psychology. Ultimately ended up leaving school, going into the workforce in construction and then real estate, property management and development. And something just kept calling me back to food. So I over the past 10 years, we've seen a huge change in the food industry with food offerings and packaged food specifically. And there are a lot of brands that are really figuring out how to reinvent classics instead of making products that are just like these vegan niche health products. And like ice cream, like soda, like cereal, I could name the brands later. And I saw a huge gap in cookies. It's a $12 billion category. And no one's really made a cookie that just tastes good, that is actually good for you. It's more about like, it's gluten-free, grain-free. Like our products are all of that, but it's more about, does this taste good? Yeah. And is it good for you? So, I mean, our cookies that are, I'll share a little bit more about the cookies in a little bit if you want, but I spent about a year on product development, did it all myself. Year of product development, then launched the product, raised some money, grew the brand, and just, it's not, we started it. I started a little tiny apartment in Manhattan, just baking cookies and teaching myself shelf life processes. And then, we went from a commercial kitchen in upstate New York to a manufacturing plant. And then my job quickly switched from making cookies to raising money and trying to figure out how to operate and scale a company. A lot has happened. It's been very turbulent. Great product, a lot of demand, but to entrepreneurship is it's an interesting journey. I mean, it's filled with it. Yeah.
It's interesting that you bring up like, it's making stuff. And now I got to sell stuff and now I got to raise money to sell stuff. How's that fundraising journey been?
It was lovely 2 years ago when money capital was just free. And there was a huge, it was lovely at that point because money was just coming in, right? There's so much demand for this product. So all of our investors wanted us to just grow. And then it quickly shifted to profitability. So it's been pretty tough for the past year because really businesses at this point need to build financially sound foundations.
Right.
And so it's been tough. It is a journey, you know, and it, like your poster says in the background, what matters the most is how well you walk through fire. I've been eating a lot of glass and we have 70 investors in the company.
Oh, wow. 70? Wow.
Yeah. With this crowdfunding campaign that we're doing, we're up to like 240.
Wow.
But I have some heavy hitters in the company.
That's great.
Thanks. But they want you to deliver. Right.
Yeah. I mean, and that's always the struggle, right? I mean, you know, they see the vision, good product, you know, category that needs innovation. That's always a challenge. The struggle is always, how do you fit that trajectory of growth at the right, you know, right angle and then get the right amount of money? And then, you know, there's a whole like spectrum of it. And a lot of time, especially in the tech sector, I'm not so sure about food because I don't have much experience there, but especially in the tech sector, the challenge is always, you know, that's like growth at all costs. And then you just mentioned, which I thought was very fascinating. It's like, no, you need to sustain growth. They want to return. They want to get, you know, their money back, and you just can't just grow without making money, you know? So how is it different in like a something like food, where my guess is the business model is pretty straightforward. It's just distribution problem, I'm assuming. I don't know, but curious.
It's somewhat the same. Investors want returns, right? See, consumers specifically, it depends on the product in the category, how cost intensive it is and how capital intensive it is. For most food brands, if you're scaling it, they need a lot of resources to grow and to gain distribution, because you're basically paying grocery stores the way things are set up. You're paying grocery stores to be there. And honestly, they'll kick you out if you don't do well, but you have to pay to be in probably around 70 or 80% of places. So,
oh, interesting.
It's sort of like paying for space, and then you have to earn your keep. So you have to pay to get in, and then you have to pay to stay. And in a lot of cases, you have to maintain that pay, and you'll see, once you see efficiencies, you need to continually support the marketing engine that it is, with like couponing and discounts and all of that. So, I mean, we've raised $1.5 million so far over the past 3 years, and we need more to grow. And it's interesting, you know, investors, the thing I did learn, and I can share this if you think it's important, is one thing I'm actually finding intriguing right now during this process is we've switched from growth to being profitable, and investors and who they are and how they evolve with the company, right? They're coming in for a return. They're investing for a return. But one thing I've learned so far is that investors that don't understand your industry or not a professional investor that don't understand, they need to understand the cash needs during the life cycle of the business. And they also need to understand the industry and the evolution of a company, in that it's going to be not very capital efficient in the beginning, and then it becomes capital efficient. I've had a lot of investors that have invested expecting it to be capital efficient from the start, and they're not coming back in because they think that there needs to be a return. That's just not how this industry works. So it's really important to select the right people that are actually going to support through the life cycle of a company based on what goal you want it, where you want to get it to.
Yeah. How do you do that with a crowdfunding campaign? I'm assuming there's just going to be all sorts of random people. They're like, I love your cookies. I want to give you some money.
Yeah. You don't really do the same thing with those investors. They're just investing based on the belief of the company. You know, if they want to follow along with it, we're lucky to find people that are sophisticated and will support after. But this is really about bringing a community together through these crowdfunding campaigns.
And you said that you've got how many, 200 plus investors so far?
So before this crowdfunding campaign, we had 70 investors, and it runs the gamut of who was involved. Like, we have the craziest one is we have a presidential candidate invested in the company. Yeah.
Do I dare ask, or should we just keep it a secret?
No, it's fine. It's fine. His name is Andrew Yang.
Oh, yeah, I know. Oh,
great
yeah,
guy.
Yeah. Oh, hi, Andrew. The Yang Gang. I remember when he first started out doing that. Wow, that was long. That was like, he started in 2015, 2016, right?
He did.
Yeah. How'd you meet him?
It's just always like this cobweb of connections, but through one of our existing investors invited me to a dinner to make a new friend who was also part of a VC. We ended up going to like the TEDx founder's house for dinner. I shared the story. And then the next day, Andrew texted me. He said, I love the story. How can I support you? And he invested. So it's just like the magical.
It's all in the networking.
Time. Yeah.
Someone ever asked you to go to a dinner at the TEDx founder, go for it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But I mean, we have great people involved. The CFO of Oatly, Siggy from this company called Siggy's Yogurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have the retail store owners, distributors, CFO of Goldman Sachs. Like, we just have, but then we have my grandparents, right? Like, my grandparents, my aunt, who's a second investor in our company. And then we have another 140 investors right now. We're midway through the campaign. You're almost sold out on pre-sale. We have 140 just great humans. We believe in a mission to see the food industry change to where it needs to change to, which is just make it easy for people to access delicious, healthy foods.
Wow. From your aunt to presidential candidate and all points in between. Seems like a message that resonates with a lot of people.
I think so.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, I mean, yeah. You know, food is one of those things, universal things that we all need to eat, right? So it brings people together, and it's also, I think, a real powerful, just a feeling. You know, I can't put words to it, but, you know, when you share a meal with friends or even strangers, there's just something about the common humanity in that, you know, and the nourishment of both body and soul, I think.
Yeah. Food. I mean, food is, someone said this, food is mother. Like, it's comfort, it's home. And it should also make you feel good and energized. I mean, not all food, right? Who doesn't want to just eat a delicious piece of cake sometimes with lots of sugar in it? But for the most part, we need to eat well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and there's a huge movement towards that. I mean, you look at the, for lack of a better word, the food industrial complex. And, you know, there's a crisis in obesity and diabetes. I mean, there's some, like, just names.
It's horrible.
Crazy stuff. Yeah, it's horrible, right?
40% of our country obese, yeah, or overweight.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And as someone who does battle their weight constantly and was a fat kid and
I get it.
Lots of bad stuff after Jane died. Just generally not. It's an important thing to kind of get right. I hope, you know, I mean, you know, you see this with, you know, the vegetarian, I mean, pick your ism, you know, vegetarianism, veganism or whatever, but it seems like, and with the resurgence actually of farmers markets, et cetera, that people are starting to come around to the power of it. I've also heard of movements where people actually using food to heal themselves as opposed to taking the drugs that get pushed on us as well. I'm just curious how, like, yes, you mean you're a cookie, right? So it's an indulgence in some respects, but is there plans for additional sort of products? Or, I mean, you've got this movement, you know, you're moving towards a little bit more holistic approach. Anything more than sugar?
Yeah. Sorry, my partner is in the background. We're in a studio apartment. He says, Sherry. He says, hello. Is there expansion into other products? Not for the next 5 years. I mean, I would love to, right? Like I would love to make other products, but in order to be successful in this industry, you really need to scale and do very well with one product. So we're just doing cookies. I mean, this could be a $200 million business with just cookies.
Oh, wow.
That's 2% of market share. I mean, I'll give you an example, like cookies, mm-hmm. that cookie brand, they're doing $100 million a year, sold for $500 million. Like and they're only cookies, right? They just take up a lot of space and they sell cookies. So I would love to be the savior and make cookies and other products, but unless somebody hands over, you know, $50 million, we're just doing cookies for right now.
Well, focus is good. I mean, a lot of times it's hard to stay focused in something like this, I would think, you know, like I'm sure people are like, oh, you should make this. Oh, you should make that. Like in any feedback on any customer interaction. I mean, tech has this problem all the time, right? It's just like, oh, build this, build that. It's good that there's a focus on that. And I think, yeah, I mean, it's just, I never knew it was such a big industry. I mean, I know food's big, but just my phrase, not yours, the simple cookie that can change the world. And interesting how it all works. Yeah. Yeah. And I noticed that your ingredients, you don't really use flour, or you just use more like nut flours and stuff. Tell me a little bit more about why you chose to do that.
Yeah. Again, it goes back to two things. It needs to taste really good and it needs to be good for you. So I wanted this to be a product that is free from like gluten, from all of those things that a lot of people are looking for, but I just wanted it to taste good and nuts and be good for you. Nuts are really, really good for people. I mean, they're healthy fats, good for brain health. They regulate blood sugar and they taste really good. Like almond flour tastes really good. It's rich and it's nourishing. So we use nut flours, root vegetables. It sounds crazy, but it actually tastes really, really good. And we sweeten them with apples. They're low glycemic apple juice concentrate. It's as simple as sugar. It's diabetic friendly. And it's been used in Italian sweeteners for the past 150 years. We get it from Milan, Italy, from a company called Rigoni di Asiago. Like I wanted to take some of the Italian heritage because they've been like three generations ago, we still have bakeries back in Italy. They make bread and it's a panetta di in southern Italy. Biscotti are made with hazelnuts. So we use almonds, hazelnuts, and apple sugar. Like things just can be simple. They can be simple and really good. And put all of that together and our cookies have three cookies has only 40% less sugar, 4 grams of added sugar from apples, 3 times the protein of normal cookies naturally, you don't taste it, and 3 times the fiber. So like 5 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, fruit sugar. It's something you can eat if you want a cookie, or you could just eat it because it's actually good for you and it makes sense to eat it. So but yeah, that's why we used it. I mean, gut health, brain health, blood sugar regulation, just general energy from real sources instead of carbs, which carbs are great, and there are carbs in this, but it's not like a sugar rush, basically.
Right. It's not like a spike in a, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, you eat it and then you get this super rush, then you get just a crash.
None of that.
You know, sugar and simple carbs tend to do that.
Yeah, I mean, there are other brands that are doing the same thing, like healthy soda. If you've heard of Olipop or Poppy, they're using apples and they're just new soda. It's fiber and apples. That's it. Halo Top, Magic Spoon, like all of these brands have figured out how to reinvent a classic and actually make it somewhat good for you. So I just want to make people healthier and make it easy.
Yeah.
That's a goal.
Yeah. Interesting. And so do you think, so you mentioned a bunch of other brands. Do you think this is going to be a pretty big movement? You think this category is going to really start to explode? Is not the right word, but I think from what I can tell, people are starting,
especially younger generation, I think are really concerned about health and the environment, you know, and all the toxic stuff that's in there. Do you see this as a movement, like all these brands sort of getting together and really kind of putting forward a better way to do it? Because I got to believe it's a little more expensive to manufacture. I don't know this. I'm just assuming. But my guess is over time, people are just going to be like, well, yeah, but I'm willing to pay for it because I want the good food.
It's a good question. Will brands come together and do that? No, I mean, typically it's like they need to be acquired by a larger brand. So it needs to be on the verge. It needs to appeal to the mass consumer that's still looking for value-driven product. I mean, more and more people every day are looking for good foods. So that will continue to expand rapidly over the next 1 to 30 years. So I think we'll definitely continue to see more acquisitions in this space by like big players like Mondelez and Biscoff and all of these, and Pepsi and Coke. But I think it's funny that you said that there are also going to be these products. There's so much demand for them. And if those big acquirers don't want to acquire it, what we're also seeing is brands are coming together, combining into one force, and they're becoming one larger company to capture efficiencies. So we are going to see that over the next 10 years, I think. Did I answer that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, because you mentioned one of your investors is the Oatly CEO or founder of Oatly.
Yeah.
And yep. I'm just a big fan of their marketing because I think they crush it. Like, you know, it's like it's oat milk, but
they did.
It's oat milk, you know, and it just, I don't know, throw the wacky idea out, like as we talked about, just seems like there's a movement towards the ethos of what you're talking about and through just collaboration and just being good partners that y'all could help each other out. I mean, Oatly is not necessarily a competitor to what you're doing, but the ethos seems to be the same. I mean, it seems like we just want to build wholesome food that's good for you, that I'm assuming also, you know, helps the planet, or like it's just, it's thoughtful, for lack of a better word. And just,
yeah, I mean, there's a kinship within this community.
Kinship.
It's very tough.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, good.
It's tough because it's so expensive, and we have to stick together. So you see that a lot for sure. And also we are raising a crowdfunding round right now. Anyone can invest as low as $100. They go on our website or wefunder.com/MMMLY. Anyone can be a stakeholder and join our mission in getting these cookies all over the country. We have pending orders from Whole Foods, Sprouts, Thrive Market, Costco. I mean, once we raise the money, cookies will be in a store near you, and you can support that if you want to.
Yeah. I mean, whole crowdfunding idea is always good to get a movement going, you know, like-minded people wanting to support good stuff. Pretty cool.
Yeah. And I mean, typically only accredited investors can invest in companies, and we're giving just regular people the opportunity to get involved and own a piece of something that they actually believe in, which it's sort of frustrating that we can't do that on a normal basis outside of crowdfunding, equity crowdfunding. So we're excited to be able to actually offer that to just friends and believers.
Yeah. I had a bunch of a friend of mine, it's actually the podcast network that this is on, Blue Wire, Kevin, he did a crowdfunding campaign as well. Interesting, nice. like be part of the, you know, Blue Wire. It's a sports podcasting network, so I'm a little bit of the odd duck here. I was an advisor early on, so they let Crazy Uncle Jari have a pot, you know. But what's interesting is that, yeah, I mean, it really kind of spurs also in marketing. And I'm kind of curious, what's been some of the best marketing channels for products like this? You know, I mean, I'm sure a lot of acquisition costs it's just tough in a crowded market, but just, I'm curious, like, what have you guys found has been successful?
Yeah, nothing beats having people try the product. So in-store, sampling out with people, getting live responses, that's how you create connections. it's really not a complicated industry, right? You have to get people to try it. So discounting the product, we pay for it. If that, nobody knows that, like we're paying for the discount. Mm-hmm. And couponing, that works really, really well. Community events, sponsoring community events. Like there's Summer Streets in New York City where they close down Park Avenue in the summer. If you haven't been, it's amazing. You can bike up and down Park Avenue during the summer. And all of these huge vendors are just giving away foods while people are running and biking. So things like that to really build community. It's all about building community around a brand. We don't really do any performance marketing right now, no digital marketing. It's mainly a retail wholesale based business. And that's it. Just getting people to try the product. And I mean, we do have influencers, like a massive amount of influencers reach out. But honestly, I think that entire ecosystem is changing and I haven't really been able to keep up with it. Like it's very expensive and you don't necessarily always have an ROI from influencers. I think what we've seen with brands is like UGC content, performance marketing, and targeted ads is probably the most effective to bring in customers through the D2C channel for sure.
You also have a subscription model?
We do. Yeah, it's built into the website. But we really see Amazon as a channel. We're getting back on Amazon again. We're the number one new chocolate chip cookie brand for about a year. And it's a great channel to be in because you have access to a huge consumer base. They can survive the subscribe and save. And yeah, it's a great channel to be in.
What were some of the challenges with it? I've heard all sorts of things. I'm just curious what your take is.
You don't know who your customer is. It's pay to play. So you have to build an engine. You have to get the flywheel going. You have to invest in it. Fulfillment. Amazon loves to charge for literally everything. Yeah. They charge for fulfillment fees. They charge for packing. They charge commission. And you just have to make sure that your unit economics are set up correctly so that you have a buffer and a security with those.
Yeah, because as an author, like I sell books through Amazon and it's always like some nebulous, I can't figure it out. Like my publisher just deals with it. I'm glad. That's like your thing, not me.
Great.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, all you. But I had other friends that do direct to consumer where it's a very powerful channel, but I like what you brought up about it needs to be managed properly because you can get in trouble real quick, especially if you don't know all the fees. It must just be like, it could be pretty frustrating if you're like, oh, yeah, I made negative money on this.
What I will say is, again, it's capital intensive. And if anyone is thinking that is listening to this is thinking of getting into entrepreneurship, like same with social media. Everyone paints a picture of what it does look like, all of the beautiful moments, but what it doesn't share is it is typically always, if someone says it's going to take 4 years, it's going to take 10 to 15. It's extremely lonely. You need to make sure that you stay connected with your family and friends because you were not your business. And I thought my business was me for years. Wow. And it's not an easy journey, right? It's not, you don't have a corporate job. You don't, you know, have sometimes regular pay. You have to go, sometimes I had to go a year without getting paid. Everyone gets paid before me. And there's very little gratification. I mean, there's always like that path at the end, but you really do need to push and it's not easy. So do your research. Right. I would just say do your research and really learn about what you're getting into and be fully committed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's actually a really good point. Is there a point where you think or some milestone where you're like, okay, I made it. This is it. Is there some place that you would just love to see your cookie somewhere? Like, is it one of those things where, like for me, the thing that hasn't happened yet, but I hope one day will,
is I'm on an airplane and someone's reading my book. And it's like, oh, well, what do you think? You know, is there one of those moments where you're like, is there something like that that you look forward to?
I mean, there was the I made it moment where we're like, okay, it's finally in Whole Foods. Like, holy crap, it's in Whole Foods. Or I'm in an airport and somebody is walking around and with a cookie and on a flight. But to be honest, that quickly dies out.
No, it's like anything. It's like, oh, here's the bonus. And you're like, is that it? Don't I get more?
Yeah. For me, what I've learned is it's more like, what will actually make my soul feel content? Oh. Not happy, but content. And that is it? It either needs to be two things. One is the I'm winning moment is it a sustainable business where I'm not hurting myself in the process? Because a lot of entrepreneurship is really, really difficult. So is it a sustainable business that is operating where I can live closer to a full life, like closer to like a normal job where this is my career. And is there just a machine built? I think that's the biggest thing. And is there a path to seeing a return from this that would otherwise be beyond just standard? What benefits do you get from working a normal job? Pay, benefits, like beyond that, what is the return for what you've sort of, you know, given up to an extent? Like I've given up my 20s, like 25 to 29, I've given up a lot of my time, a lot. And it's not that I've given it up. I would say sort of devoted myself to it, like meshed with it. And then at a certain point, you have to become sort of not as meshed as before, where there's a clear separation of self and object or entity. So I think to me that's success, like really seeing something have a life of its own without being connected to your life force. Right.
Interesting. So like more of a sustainable, like you've built the engine and the engine runs the flywheel. I think you mentioned flywheel. You just built the flywheel and now you could step away and the flywheel still runs.
Yeah, you have a team, right? Yeah. You have a team, you have people, you have product, you have profits, you don't have to, you can go away for a week without being on your computer every single day and constantly checking emails. I don't think I've taken a vacation in 4 years.
Yeah.
I haven't. I've gone away and I'm always working. And it's sort of like raising a child, but that doesn't really ever grow up. Until it comes with it.
Until it's like one day, it's just like, that's an interesting way to put it. Like,
yeah,
I like that. When you can sort of, when it runs itself, you can step away for a week. You've built a team, you've built and something that stands on its own. It doesn't necessarily need you to run. Interesting. Yeah.
It's huge. I mean, it's mental health, right?
Yeah. No, I can see.
That's another big thing that I've learned is I am not my business. I'm not my business.
That's a hard one to learn.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like facing not an actual death, but a death in your life. Because this isn't a business to me. Like this is my life and this is my heart and my story in a company that is also, that has a mission, is also supposed to be a profit-based business. But I have had to learn how to really detach from the outcome, like, and respect myself during the process and acknowledge that if it doesn't work out, that's fine. And that's okay. That's actually really okay and good. And I'll still be whole and it's okay, right? It's all good. And that's something that it's taken me years to get to that point where I don't feel personally responsible for all 70 people that have come in. Yeah, I'm doing everything I can to deliver a return for everyone. And I will until there's an outcome for everyone.
Right.
But if it starts getting to a point, which it has previously, then I've figured out how to really fix that. And I'm still figuring that out, to be honest. If it gets to a point where it starts to create more sacrifice and degradation of self, then it doesn't make sense. Something needs to change. And maybe it's not walking away from the business. Maybe it's how it's operating, what the goals are, how to be more realistic, and how to have it really respect your needs as a human being.
Yeah. Wow. I think that's a great place to end it, Nicholas.
Yeah.
Being on the show, man.
For sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dari.
Good luck and stay in touch.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.